This is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on what has turned out to be a very nice Monday morning here in the city as we listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. What a shift from Saturday night when I went to the City in Motion event. Snow is coming down thick in downtown, but a big change to Sunday to Monday. Great week in store for all of us. Supposed to get even warmer. What did I hear on the radio a little earlier? What did she say? She said 48 maybe a high for tomorrow. How nice that's going to be. Maybe spring is finally around and Tony Soprano can call off that hit on the groundhog for all that went on with that. Welcome to the show. Couple of great events to talk to you about. First of all, we're going to journey on over to the Kauffman Center. At least that's where the event is taking place. And the Sterling Dance Theater will be doing their 8th annual rendition of Underground. And with us to tell us all about it, Jeremiah Enna is here. He is the founder and CEO of which organization? It's split into two. So Culture House
really
would be yours.
Two brands, the Culture House. But Sterling Dance Theater is really what we're talking about today. And it says I'm the founder, but I'm the founder with my wife, Mona Sterling Enna. Sterling is her maiden name. And she's the real power. I'm just the backup singer in this duo. Yeah.
So why do I have the feeling you probably do a lot of paperwork and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah,
you
got it.
And she does a lot of creative stuff.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she's earned the right for me to do paperwork. And I do the paperwork because I can't do what she does. So, you know, that became clear.
Well, that's a pretty good partnership,
yeah,
then.
It is.
I would think on your list of credits, UCLA. Studied at UCLA. In fact, you won the Carol Burnett Award for your work in musical theater.
I did. Carol Burnett, if you know her story, she went to UCLA and was at a party for some of the students, and a benefactor came up to her and thought she was so talented. He then funded her to move to New York and get her career started right away. So she left school. Not that I'm encouraging this. She left school. And so based on that, she established an award. And every year a student is, you know, encouraged. And it's a great experience to do it because you do it with your fellow students. And it was a lot of fun. And I was fortunate to win. But pretty much everyone in that class was pretty amazing. So,
I bet so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ran right out there amongst all the Hollywood luminaries.
That's right. I'm trying to think. I mean, we have some, you know, one of my friends from those days, he's a writer and very successful, writes all the scripts for the Scooby-Doo movies. And then Jack Black was a classmate of mine. I would say there's a high percentage of fellow students that are still in the industry from that class.
Oh, sure. Now, people might chuckle at Scooby-Doo, but hey make a lot of money off of that.
That's right. And that's the point I bring it up. Scooby-Doo is, you know, a brand. It is a huge thing. So for him to land that job is a big deal. And everyone fusses around anyone who's over such a huge brand. So.
Well, I'll bet so. Well, we're here to talk about your show Underground, the 8th annual time that you have put on the show Underground. Where did the show first come to your attention, or your wife's attention, or both of you probably?
Really both. Yeah. And let me say, because we were talking about the founding, currently the artistic directors for the company are my wife, Mona, and Tobin James, who's been the artistic director now for 8 years, with Mona for 8 years. And they are quite a dynamic team. And really, it started all the way back in 2000. We were watching the news, and we'd lived back in Kansas City for a few years, and back in America. I lived in Sweden prior to moving to Kansas City. And we're just disheartened by a lot of the language in the media around race and the divisiveness. And so that got us thinking. And Tobin was, we had worked for her first. We were her dancers first. And then she took a break from choreographing and leading, and we asked her to dance for our company, which she did. And it was during that period we approached her about this underground story because we thought it was a great historic moment where good people came together, and it wasn't about black versus white, but about good versus evil. And so we thought, let's put something together around this show. It took 2 years. Actually, it took 4 years from the initial conversation with Tobin. All the music was written, composed, and arranged by Jay Pfeiffer. So it was a four-year process of creating this production. And we premiered it in 2008. And, you know, we thought, like some of our other productions, we would perform it and then put it on the shelf for a couple years and bring it out every once in a while. But the response was so strong, including our local critic Paul Horsley, who named it as one of the top shows of that year and then eventually of the decade for Kansas City. The response was so strong that we just said, well, let's do it again, and let's do it again. And so that's how it's become, you know, kind of a tradition. And when the Kauffman opened, and the then President Jane Chu approached us asking us to bring it to the Kauffman for that first year, that was a great encouragement.
I was going to ask how you got to the Kauffman. Big room, one of the biggest rooms in town.
That's right. Well, Jane had come to see the show. She'd heard about it and came to see the show, and she approached us, and we were very honored and are still honored to be in that space because it has really performed what Julia Kauffman and all the leadership that put it together said it would do, I think. I will never forget the opening day when it was raining and those lines of people were standing in the rain waiting to get in. And it just hasn't let up since. It really has, I think, changed the tenor and the face of Kansas City to the rest of the world.
Yeah, there's two performing spaces there. So you are in the Muriel
Kauffman? We're in the Muriel Kauffman, Muriel McBryan Kauffman Theater. And we do two morning shows for school kids on Thursday and Friday this week. And they've been sold out since November.
Oh,
so
wow.
Over 3,000 kids will be there. We do that every year. And it's just, that is one of the most phenomenal experiences, is to hear them react, to see the teachers with tears streaming down their face watching this show, with inspirational tears as well as sorrowful ones. And then Friday night, we're just doing one night this year. There's still some tickets left, but we're expecting it to sell out this year.
And Friday, March 6th at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center. The number to call, by the way, for information is 816-994-7222, or you can go to the Kauffman Center website at Kauffman Center, K-A-U. I'm surprised. With the Kauffman family being in town, how people sometimes misspell that name. Kauffman Center.org. Sterling Dance also has a website as well. I won't confuse you with those.
Just Google
us. Yeah, just Google them. No, I'll give it later on. I just don't want to confuse the people with that. You're mentioning the kids' show. I remember, at least when I was in grade school, how they would take us to see shows at the then Music Hall.
Yeah.
There was a Young People's Theater Company, and
wow.
I saw Shakespeare. I remember seeing Peter and the Rabbit. It was narrated by Tori Southwick, and Jeremiah doesn't know who that is.
No, I don't.
But young children of my era, he hosted a children's afternoon cartoon and comedy show
Very
on television.
Cool.
Seeing him up there narrating Peter of the Wolf was really something. They took us to the Philharmonic. All of it was in one of the two theaters over there at the municipal auditorium.
Wow.
And what an experience that was. The teachers would carefully prepare us. I remember one teacher even played the music of what we were going to see before
Great.
We went, so we'd react properly, know when to applaud and all
That's
that.
Right.
So it really does set you up for a lifetime of following the arts when you become used to following that.
Yeah, they learn etiquette in the theater, although it's really underground is such a compelling experience to go through and sit and watch. And the teachers are always amazed because their kids, every year now for 8 years, the kids are perfect. They sit there. They are glued to the stage. But they get so into it, you'll hear them cry out, "No, go that way, run." I mean, people just get into it. It's so great. It's so exciting. And one of the highlights, definitely. Well, and we also have a curriculum guide, and two of our board members, Dr. Donna Davis and Marie MacArthur, they have written this curriculum guide, and it was chosen 2 years ago by the American Educational Research Association as one of the top examples of education and arts working together in the nation. So that's very encouraging. So all the teachers get a copy of that, and we fine-tune it. They tweaked it a little this year, trying to always bring fresh ideas. So
it is a historic story, a story essentially of the Underground Railroad, the era, the slave trading era, and mm-hmm. how they helped people from stop to stop escape to the Northern Territories where they can be free people.
That's right.
Yeah, that's essentially the story. Do you want to add more to that, Jeremiah?
Well, I think that, you know, as we did research, because our black friends said that we were honorary black people now because we actually know more about the history than some of them.
Well, that's a nice title.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you know more than me. You can have, you know, the status. And but we read so many books. And I think in some of the books, it'll say it just popped up out of anywhere. There was no structure. There wasn't a board of directors. It just popped up out of anywhere. And I would say that the thing that became clear as you read history is it really didn't pop up out of nowhere. It popped up out of the churches. In our production, the Quaker Church movement, which really the abolition movement through Quakers really started in England. And so if you go back to England, there were leaders there who were communicating with white abolitionists in America, mm. helping to encourage them, like Benjamin Franklin is one of the more famous people who used to be a slave owner and stood up for it and then had a complete 180 turnaround and was fighting against it. So I think that that's something that we highlight is that the, you know, in one sense, God is really the hero. There's no one hero. There was no, like I said, structure. But God is really the hero of the abolition movement. And that kind of comes out in its proper historic setting through the show. And then we have a kind of a surprise ending. We don't change history at all. But we have an ending that kind of wraps it up that is very inspiring.
Yeah, people were brave enough to keep people in their homes till they could move on to the next station, essentially. I'm always surprised at the people who think that there was actually a tunnel underground and they moved people along the railroad. It was not that kind of railroad.
No, not at all. And a lot of people don't realize because, of course, it took white people to free black people and help hide them. But, of course, a lot of the Underground Railroad were black people. Freed black men and women, some of whom would risk their freedom again, going back into slave territories to help others get away. Harriet Tubman, of course, is mm-hmm. one of the most famous. But there's a huge contingency of the Underground Railroad, the abolition movement, were the black people themselves. And in fact, Mona and I were in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago and were fortunate enough to land at the National Archives when there was a lecture by Pulitzer Prize winning author and historian Eric Foner. And he's written a new book called Gateway to Freedom. And this, I haven't read it yet, I just bought it. But basically, they discovered at Columbia University in their archives was a box with this huge document in it that no one had really figured out what it was until some of his students started referencing it. But basically, an abolitionist in New York, in the city of New York, had interviewed over 200 runaway slaves on their way to Canada to have even more freedom because there were still so many people trying to nab runaway slaves and force them back into slavery. So they would, many of them aimed to go to Canada. And he interviewed them on their way, over 200. They've just discovered this document. So look forward to reading that. But a lot of that is also the history of both the white and the black abolition movement.
Sure, sure. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Theater for Young America does the Harriet Tubman play every once in a while. Not every year. Just what a nice combination that would be. Kids get to see both of those.
And it's great to have, I mean, about 8 years ago, 8 to 9 years ago, there was just a slew of new books that came out about all different people, heroes, and different things that had gone on and made it much more accessible But I find it one of the most, I mean, here we are, and there's a lot of discussion of racism and things in America right now. And I find it very guiding and inspiring to read these books from the past, to see how people interacted, what motivated them, and to kind of bring it back to a conversation about the dignity of all men and women, obviously, and children, as opposed to black versus white.
Sure.
And it helps, you know, part of what we've done about, after about 6 years, we started something we call the Inspire Freedom Celebration Week. So there's actually about 6 or 7 other events going on this week. There's a children's literature event. There's an art exhibition at the gallery. It's in the Crossroads. It's a new gallery. It's at Christ Community Church, but it's a gallery, on Baltimore, 17th in Baltimore. And the exhibition is architecture from around the country and around the world that was inspired by freedom or inspires freedom. There is the school shows. There's also a gathering of pastors and civic leaders to help inspire and educate about foster care, because we have a great need for more foster care homes in Kansas City for kids who need warm and encouraging homes. And so we work together with a group called the Global Orphan Project, and we host a gathering of these civic leaders, foster care leaders, and pastors. So that goes on. We're going to try to keep building these events. So most of those are free events, so people can access those. The children's literature event is co-sponsored by the Kansas City Downtown Library, and they provide free books for the kids. So we're trying to, you know, take very seriously the success of this performance and do even more into the community.
Yeah, we're speaking with Jeremiah Enna. He is the founder and co-founder and CEO of Culture House, and their organization, Sterling Dance, is producing and producing, directing, and performing Underground this Friday, March 6th, 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center. Again, the number that you can call for more information is 816-994-7222 or on the website at kauffmancenter.org. It is pronounced Sterling Dance, but if you want to look them up, it would be as if it were written Sterling Dance, because that's your wife from Finland. That is her name.
That's right.
So it's STORLING dance.org. Good to have Jeremiah on the show today. We should talk about the dancing. I mean, that's
well, the dancing is phenomenal.
You tell a story through dancing.
Yeah, that's really one of their strengths. Mona and Tobin working together can tell a story like no other. And they're very meticulous about it in the storyline, you know, creating it. Like I said, it took years just to get the storyline right. But the dancers come from all over the country to be in the company. And then we have about 15 dancers who are a stable. They're the main company. Locally, one of our senior dancers, Alexandra Wilson, grew up here, went to UMKC, and is one of our top soloists. But we also have people who've moved here from around the country to join the company as well. But for Underground, we actually have a cast of 55 artists. Yeah, it's a lot. So there's the main company. Then there are guest dancers, some of whom are flown in. This year, we have a male dancer named Tristan Griffin, and he is fantastic. And so he's flown in from New York to do his part. And then we have a group of dancers and some actors that are in the show that are local, that are very professional, some of whom have been in the show 8 years. Like Lorna Jarrett is trained in dance, modern ballet. She's also a physical therapist and all those things. And she has really crafted a role that's just her. If we ever had to, you know, take it to Broadway, there'd be a role called Lorna Jarrett. And also, this year, we've added the character of Harriet Tubman. And Karen Armstead plays that role. She's been in the show for years, but now we've added Harriet Tubman's character in there to kind of complete that whole aspect of the black abolitionist. So it's all the dancers in the main company have a strong base in ballet with a secondary emphasis in modern. They train every day, and they take both ballet. And we emphasize Graham because Tobin graduated from the Graham School in New York. Mm-hmm. So they learn Graham. And then we have guest teachers come in. But they train every day.
Do you have a music director?
We do not have a music director. The composer, Jay Pfeiffer, who I mentioned, we're gearing up to work on another major work, another full two-act ballet, and we'll probably be working with Jay again. We had such a great experience with him, and he's very eclectic. But other than that, we draw from already recorded music for most of our shows.
Yeah, the story draws on accounts of those who lived during the transatlantic slave trade times and the Underground Railroad told through music and dance.
And lighting. Well, you know, that theater at the Kauffman is just so beautiful. And the lighting is brighter. I've said, you know, I didn't believe it until I was there when they opened, but the lighting's brighter, the pictures are more beautiful. I mean, everything looks better on that stage. And Robert Bowen, he's from Texas. He got his master's degree in lighting from UMKC. That's where we first met. And he comes up every year to light the show. He just arrived today. So he does a phenomenal job of lighting the show. It's a beautiful artistic expression of this story that hopefully gives honor to the people it's about.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you have other events during the year. I remember seeing, what was it? It was West Side Story I saw. It was April, May?
That was from our academy. Yes, we did West Side Story. We have at the Culture House, which many of the Sterling dancers teach at. We have an academy of the performing arts, dance, theater, music, art. And in fact, we have over 700 students that train after school at the Culture House. And they're just phenomenal kids and some exceptional talents. They did West Side Story last year. And we're just gearing up for auditions. Every summer we do one major production. And this is for the community. Anyone can audition. It's cast age appropriately. It's not a kids show. And last year we did Big River at the Kauffman, and it was just a huge success and won lots of awards, which was exciting. Amy Sander was the director of that, and she's directing again this summer. We're doing Into the Woods because it actually doesn't get done that much, and the movie was coming out, and the music is so great, and the acting roles are so great. And so auditions for that at the Culture House are actually this Saturday.
Oh, really?
So if you're out there and you're, you know, have professional training and talent, go to our website, which is culturehouse.com.
Okay.
And auditions are this Saturday for that.
So culturehouse.com for that.
Yeah.
And you also, you mentioned the musical you have in the summer as well. Do you just do those three? Do you other things as well?
Well, in the summer, our main activity is we have summer programs and camps for kids. So those are, once again, phenomenal in dance and theater, lots of musical theater. We do great two-week musicals where kids get to complete an entire musical in 2 weeks and paint sets and learn the music, and it's quite a muscle builder. And then we have dance camps, and from the littlest ones to we're doing a two-week Paquita where the girls learn the actual classical choreography to Paquita. And then we have art camps. We're actually partnering with a arts group called Silver Tree Visual Arts. And so we're going to be providing a much larger spectrum of art classes with them this summer. And then, of course, our music programs. So we are just bustling all summer with kids and from all over the city.
Sure. A lot going on over there. But the big event coming up this Friday night, March 6th, 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center, Underground, the story of the Underground Railroad. The number to call at the Kauffman Center. It's in the big room. It must be intimidating for some of those young people.
That's right.
816-994-7222. Or you can go online to learn about it at kauffmancenter.org. I guess the two shows for young people towards the end of the week are both sold out and have been since November.
They have. They're a hot ticket.
So they'll be enjoying that. But a chance for the rest of you to see it at the Kauffman Center this Friday night, March 6th, Underground. critically acclaimed here in town. You mentioned Paul Horsley.
Paul Horsley, yeah, just a big fan of the show, and he listed it as one of the top 10 performances of the decade for Kansas City.
Now, that's a lot to say.
That was pretty sweet, yeah. You know, seeing our name right up there under, but still under the Kansas City Ballet, we'll take it. But very, very encouraging to have, because he, you know, he doesn't say it unless he means it. And that's what real criticism is about. And he found it worthy. So we're very glad.
Yeah, well, I should have mentioned the costuming and things like that.
Well, yeah, beautiful. I mean, Mona designed all the costumes for this show, as she does.
Wow.
That's part of her thing is the costuming. And both she and Tobin are beautiful designers. But for this show, she designed those.
Okay, that's great. Well, the show Underground happens this Friday night at the Kauffman Center. It's a production of the Sterling Dance Theater. The number to call for more information about ticketing is 816-994-7222 or on the line on web at kauffmancenter.org. Information about the dance company, culturehouse.com or it's
sterlingdance.org.
It's pronounced Sterling, but it's written Sterling.
That's right. We're just keeping you on your toes, you know.
Sterling Dance, and I should spell it Sterling dance.org. Now, that's a lot of information to pass to people.
That's a lot, but, you know, just show up at the Kauffman if there's still tickets by Friday night, but I would encourage you to go online as they are moving, so.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Jeremiah
Thank
Anna,
you, Michael.
Co-founder and CEO of Culture House and the Sterling Dance Company in their production of Underground, happening this Friday night at the Kauffman Center. Thanks so much for being with us. When we return from our break, we have much more to talk to you about. Exciting shows going on all over town, getting into gear for the springtime, that's for sure. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic furniture local theaters. The 87th Annual Academy Awards took place on February 22nd, and the big winner was Birdman, taking home the prize for Best Film, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. A lot of people were disappointed in this pick, finding it too dark and off-putting, but the virtuosity and artistry involved in Birdman are undeniable. In that respect, Birdman soars. Other winners included Eddie Redmayne for Best Actor for his portrayal of physicist Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything. The Best Actress Award went to Julianne Moore as an Alzheimer's sufferer in Still Alice. J.K. Simmons took the Best Supporting Actor Award as the abusive jazz professor in Whiplash. And Patricia Arquette took the Supporting Actress Prize for playing a put-upon mom in Boyhood. Speaking of the Oscars, another nominee opens in Kansas City this week. It's hard to imagine why Russian officials allowed Leviathan, a scathing critique of local government corruption, to be one of this year's worthy nominees for Best Foreign Language Film. They probably gave it a pass because it's a brilliantly executed social critique and an intelligent look at the age-old struggle between the powerful and the powerless. While Leviathan is very depressing, this tale of corruption in modern Russia is an intriguing reworking of the biblical story of Job. Also opening this week, Will Smith returns in Focus, a thriller about a con artist who takes on a beautiful protege, played by Margot Robbie. The Lazarus Effect is a horror film about a group of researchers who attempt to bring back people from the dead. Olivia Wilde and Mark Duplass star. What We Do in the Shadows is a vampire comedy from the folks from Flight of the Conchords. And finally, Wormwood, Road of the Dead, is an Australian zombie flick playing exclusively at the newly opened Screenland Crossroads at 1701 McGee. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
This week, we explore the disappearing religions of the Middle East, from the Druze of Lebanon to the Zoroastrians of Iran.
The Middle East itself has flourished and prospered as a result of having these different minorities and religions in its midst. And it is an unhealthy and sad thing about the Middle East now that it is being deprived of the chance to have that coexistence.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
After I had sent President Johnson a telegram telling him to bring the people home from the Dominican Republic and Vietnam, and I said to President Johnson at that time, if this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad one.
The irrepressible Fannie Lou Hamer on the Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, Wednesday morning at 5.
One of my mentors was one of his bodyguards, a brother known in Harlem as Sonny Malik. And Sonny was like straight up, straight ahead, and would take you out on a dime. But he loved Malcolm, and he did his best with his comrades who were Sunni Muslims to protect Malcolm. But 2 weeks before Malcolm's death, Sunni and a few brothers were swept up off of the streets of New York, end up in a federal prison in Atlanta without any charges.
The assassination of Malcolm X on Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
I was asked, you know, was the election of Barack Obama in 8 Martin Luther King's dream? And my answer was no.
No.
No, it wasn't. Martin Luther King was a leader and Barack Obama's politician.
There's a river of birds.
Nikki Giovanni speaks on Wings Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Another interesting show to talk about. It's a Frank Higgins play. Frank has written many plays. I kiddingly said to them earlier, well, if I read the credits here, there'll be a lot to go. But Frank is well published and well performed as a playwright. He also teaches at UMKC. He's a member of the Dramatists Guild. Let's see. Let's do a little summary of Frank. Now, this is cut down.
Let's cut to Walter Coppins.
Oh, he has a lot, too. The Sweet By and By, or Frank's play, The Sweet By and By, was produced by himself, along with Blythe Danner and Gwyneth Paltrow. When it was all over, was at a, what was the term she used? A pleasant uncoupling. That was a quote of hers when she separated from her husband not too long ago.
So when
the jokes, as Walter knows, he's been a comedian. When the jokes don't go over, you just move on.
I assume that was some kind of a reference, you know, in the show. I thought that maybe that was that a title.
No, we never really uncoupled in our case. So.
Frank's play, The Taste Test, will be performed in June at the Just Off Broadway Theater. His play, Born Blue, The Diary of the Blue Cat, will be done along with the Coterie Theater at the Fringe Festival this summer. Lots of opportunities to see Frank's work. But his work has also been performed at theaters such as the Williamstown Festival, the Old Globe Theater, Forbes Theater, the one in Washington, D.C., Frank?
Forbes Theater, yes.
Did you sit in the president's box to watch
Well,
play?
They don't let you sit in the president's box because it's a national historic site, but without anyone seeing, I was able to go into the presidential box.
Well, yeah, that would be quite
can't
a
take
place
your
to
cell
sit.
Phone in.
So oh, really?
No taking pictures.
Also, the North Light Theater in Chicago, San Jose Repertory Theater, of course, the Kansas City Repertory Theater, and the Virginia Stage Company, and many, many more. Congratulations on your work.
And well, thank you. And let's hear about Walter Coppedge directing Black Pearl Sings, too.
Yes. It does get embarrassing after a while. Walter Coppedge is with us as well. He is directing this time along, although we've seen him appear many, many times. I saw him as recent as Christmas time when he appeared as Bob Cratchit in the Repertory Theater production of A Christmas Carol. But he has many credits beyond that as well, of course. The Steppenwolf Theater Company. The Studio Theater in Washington, D.C., The Rep, many times with The Rep, with Kansas City Actors Theater, where he is one of the founding members, the St. Louis Black Repertory Theater, roles at the Coterie, roles at the Unicorn. He played Martin Luther King in The Mountaintop. He won an award, The Pitch Weekly, for portraying an icon, which would be Martin Luther King.
The best portrayal of an icon, I believe, was the actual award, which... I don't remember how many other people played icons that year, so I think I had a shoe in.
Now, don't minimize. Don't minimize, Walter.
It's a complete category.
All right.
Yeah, the guy that did JFK, I trashed him. I did. I totally took that guy out with my MLK.
Also on television, shows on CBS. I'll just summarize it this way. Shows on CBS, Lifetime, Showtime, ABC, and HBO. Congratulations on your...
Thank you.
Career as well.
I'm sitting here, Michael, going, oh, yeah. Oh, wow. I remember that.
That was me.
Who is that guy? He's very impressive.
Oh, he really was. And to borrow that Sara Lee commercial line. Nobody doesn't like Walter Coppedge. No, I've never heard anyone trash you or say a bad word about you.
Oh, you don't get out enough. Then probably my gosh.
I haven't met your wife. I don't know. But
there you
okay,
go.
Okay, so
you are directing Frank's play,
yes,
The Black Pearl Sings.
Mm-hmm. Black Pearl Sings. You know, this is a show I've, in fact, at the first rehearsal, I kind of brought this up. And I have a history with this show, never having obviously directed it, or never having obviously performed in it, as it is two women, nor directing it till now. But I was aware of Frank's play when he first when he had first started producing it, when it got its initial read over at Rutgers University. I knew about it then. You know, Frank and I go back years, so I was well aware of it. And then I began to hear that it was getting productions around the country. And when I was in D.C. working at the Studio Theater, about that same time as my show was up, Frank's show was going up at the Ford's Theater. So I was well aware. I met the director at Studio Theater, and she kind of was the one that brought up the connection. You know Frank Higgins? You're from Kansas City. You know Frank Higgins? Yes, I do. So there was a connection there. And, you know, I was very happy to see Frank's play making it there. And then it just started going everywhere. I remember reading it a couple of years ago, I think it was. It was one of the top 10 produced shows nationally. You know, in the country at regional theaters. So, I mean, it was right there with Mountaintop and Venus and Fur and all these other shows that were extremely popular. Oh, yeah. And then as I was going up to work at Steppenwolf a couple of years ago, I literally was on I-35 headed north, and my phone rings. And I looked down. Frank Higgins, okay, I pick up the phone. Hey, you're going to be in Chicago. My show is at the North Light Theater. So I feel like either I'm following the show around the country or it's following me. So it's kind of kismet.
Oh, wow.
Finally, I get a chance to actually, you know, one. I just wanted to see it. Who knew that I would have the opportunity? You know, God bless Michael Grayman and Annie Parkers for giving me an opportunity to direct it.
Yeah, I should mention it's a Spinning Tree Theater production.
It
it's over at their place, actually at the Just Off Broadway Theater, mm-hmm. which is located, by the way, at 3051 Penn Valley Drive. It has an actual address now. We used to always say Penn Valley Park, mm-hmm. and it will run March 6th, this coming Friday, and run through the 22nd, which is a Sunday of March. Information can be found at SpinningTreeTheater.com, and they have a number. You write it down now. I'll repeat it a few times. 816-569-5277. But it begins this Friday night, Frank. Oftentimes your plays have a historical component to them. Is this the same with Black Pearl Sings?
Well, it is. If somebody is interested in the music of Lead Belly or and John Lomax and Alan Lomax and any of that, the milieu in the 20s and 30s with song collectors from the Library of Congress and other places going out into the field, meaning out into the real world, and recording outside a recording studio of people who are non-professional musicians singing songs or performing their instruments. And what Black Pearl Sings is, I had thought about writing a play about Lead Belly and John Lomax, but I came across an African song. And that didn't show up in real life. So the problem when you write about a real life person is that in some ways it's an advantage, and in other ways it's a huge disadvantage because you're limited by mere facts, mm-hmm. you know, about that person.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I came across this African song, it just clicked. Like, let's go away from Lead Belly and John Lomax and make it two women, because it made more sense that the idea of the songs being passed on generation to generation is more of a matrilineal line. I mean, it's through the women rather than through the men. And so once I had that little eureka moment, you know, it all clicked together. And then the Spinning Tree Theater wanted to do Black Pearl Sings. A little sidelight, Michael Grayman, the artistic director's mother, saw a production in Cincinnati 2 years ago. And so he came to know the play via his mother, seeing it in Cincinnati. So I was very impressed with the caliber of work that Spinning Tree Theater does. So, you know, they won me over. You know, like,
sure.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it, and we'll have this, you know. They've done a little night music, for example. I mean, I enjoyed that production as much as anything I've seen in the last half dozen years.
Yeah.
So So that's kind of, and we have a wonderful blend of actors.
Oh, it's a great cast.
Vanessa Severo and Nedra Dixon, and Walter's making his directorial debut and is wonderful in terms of working with the actors. So it's got, you can feel the love in the room.
Well, that fits in for Nedra. She told me in an interview one time that she actually had done hair in New York.
Yes.
Among other things.
Yes, Nedra's got many, many credits. And, yeah, they extend to New York. Some Broadway touring shows. I mean, she's worked out in L.A. I mean, so she brings a lot of experience to this role. And, you know, I just feel very fortunate to have these two actors. I mean, I you know, there's that old saying. I think people say, you know, directing 70% of it is casting. And in this case, it may be 90%. So, sure. I am truly lucky to have these two ladies in this show.
Vanessa was recently seen at the Unicorn in The Lasso of Truth. Mm-hmm. So she goes from that right to
I think she had a day off in between these two shows. Yeah, she's one of the hardest working actors in show business, in Kansas City. Yeah, so very fortunate to get her. The same with Nedra. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better cast.
Yeah, it's called Pearl. Black Pearl sings. Yes. A lady named Pearl, who we find in prison.
Who sings? No, wait.
Who sings?
Well, the Vanessa Severo plays a character who is working for the Library of Congress, and she used to be in the Southern Mountains collecting, up in the mountains with a recording machine, and is now traveling to prisons in the South and Southwest. So she is in a Texas prison, and at the very top of the play meets Pearl. Who is, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say she's in prison.
Oh, no, wait, I was hiding that.
I wasn't supposed to say that.
Star Wars is set in outer space. And,
he's his father. What?
So it's about a woman who is collecting songs from the Library of Congress and meets a woman who knows a lot of songs and is a kind of human library of a lot of songs that go back to slavery times and even earlier. And so it is a play. I mean, I think of the play as even kind of a dance between these two women as they, dance forward, toward each other and away from each other, kind of give and take.
Does Pearl not really trust her? Is that part of the problem?
Well, what would you say?
Well, I think it's, these two women, if you were just, especially in 1933, if you were to just look at them as characters, there's no way they would form this. The friendship that they do form, the bond that they do form, doesn't seem like it's possible. One is a young white woman from the East Coast, from New York, from a very affluent family, highly educated, academic, whereas Pearl is born on the Gullah Islands, Hilton Head, South Carolina, very, very poor, rural background, now has been imprisoned in a Texas prison farm system. They should not be in the same room together, let alone form this relationship. It certainly has its tensions. But one of the beauties of this is that, to me, of this show, is that how there is this common language that is spoken between them, and that is this music. And they begin to see beyond that. They have so many connections. They're both women. The sisterhood, the mother-daughter relationship that comes up between them, they begin to learn, as will the audience, that there are many connections. And I think, it's like real life. I mean, often we find the race and class to be economic status to be those things that separate us, when in fact, when we really look at it closer, those things are nothing. The things that bind us together are much stronger. So I think that's what's happening between these two women, and that's what's happening in this play.
Sure. Now, did you find in your research, Frank, that this is how some of these songs were passed down?
Oh, exactly.
Everything didn't get written down.
Exactly.
Things were not
written down. I mean, some of the people were illiterate, and some of the things are passed from generation to generation. What's interesting about the African song is I saw a documentary called The Language You Cry In. Which and the story of that is about 1933, a college professor recorded a grandmother and her granddaughter singing what they thought were nonsense syllables and sounded kind of almost like a children's song. And so then that was recorded, sat on a shelf for decades. And eventually a professor from Sierra Leone heard the tape and said, you know, there's words from that that sound like a dialect from my country in Sierra Leone. And so to condense this one-hour documentary down, then what happens is that little girl from the 30s, who was now a grandmother, the filmmakers find this inland village in Sierra Leone, and they fly that little girl, who's now a grandmother, and her family to Sierra Leone, and they find a woman in one of these remote villages who knows the song. So the two women sing, you know, side by side, who may actually be blood cousins, for all we know. But I was fascinated with that idea of, you know, how did music travel across the Atlantic Ocean in the slave ships? And so the people knew songs. I mean, history could be passed on by a song. I mean, entertainment, a song could be many things. And then gradually, generation by generation, those things die out. And what the song collector in Black Pearl Sings is about is trying to capture those things. In 1933, there are still people living who were slaves. And she's trying to capture the easy way to say it is folklore, but this kind of living library, mm-hmm. you know, of mm-hmm. knowledge, before it dies out. She's, oh, yeah. you know, the sand is getting out of the hourglass, and she's trying to capture and save it, you know, before it's gone forever.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's kind of what's, you know, the Library of Congress and those efforts, you know, by people like John Lomax and Alan Lomax to go out and preserve this, or as our character in Black Pearl Sings Susanna, you know, there's this need to preserve our history, this oral history that's not been written down. I mean, this would go on and become the story course, you know, where, like, now we're trying to preserve the stories of the World War II vets who are dying out. There are very few left. And that history, a lot of it, has not been written down. It's just retained in the head of those people who lived through those periods. And so, you know, for future generations, as we have learned, you know, our history makes us who we are. I mean, you know, our lineage, our ancestry, those things are very important to us. And so the songs and the stories of that are important to us too, and for future generations. So the Susanna's mission to preserve this history for future generations is the same as Pearl's mission, you know. So those are one of those things where they intersect. They both are trying to preserve something. The way they go about it is different. And their objectives in the, you know, who they're preserving it for may be slightly different, but they still feel that need to do that. And I think it's fascinating that Frank made them women, because I think it is true. I think it is in our culture and in others, it seems to be the women. I know in my family, it was the women that held the history, my mother, my grandmother, that seemed to hold the history and then share those stories and songs with our family. So I think that there's a great grain of truth with these two women wanting to do that.
This is the way it actually happened. We're speaking with Frank Higgins, playwright, and Walter Cobbage, the director in this show. He has appeared as an actor many, many times in the Spinning Tree Theater production of Black Pearl Sings, opening up at the Just Off Broadway Theater this Friday night, March 6th. It'll run through the 22nd. I looked at the calendar. I wanted to get the dates and the times right. Some of the nights it's 7:30. Yes. Other nights it's 8 o'clock. There's matinees in the afternoon.
Wednesday and Thursday evenings are 7:30. The mm-hmm. Friday and Saturday evenings are at 8 o'clock, and then the matinee
Sunday at 2.
Mm-hmm. And it's Spinning Tree Theater. So if any of the information we're giving out, if people can't remember a phone number, just if you just Google SpinningTreeTheater.com.
Sure, Spinning Tree. They have a great website, SpinningTreeTheater.com, and the number to call for more information, 816-569-5277. We're speaking with Frank and Walter about the play. Like I said earlier, great casting. Were these the people you had in mind or Walter had in mind?
Sure. I mean, what's fascinating is, for example, I've seen Vanessa. Vanessa Severo's been in, I think, 3 or 4 plays of mine, and each role is very different. And then I've seen her probably in other plays, 15, 20, 25 times, and this role's different from anything else that that she's played, and it's also different pretty much from the way the role has been played. There have been, I'm guessing, 50 productions of the show that have been here in this country, and I've seen, I'm guessing maybe 15 productions. And usually the way that the song collector for the Library of Congress is cast in other productions I'm not involved with, they usually cast it as like a 19th century librarian.
Oh, I see.
And the only problem with that is it doesn't quite fit the character, because it's 1933. She's out there by herself. She's driving her own car. There's no freeways, so you get flat tires. You got to fix your own flat tire. She holds the recording machine up into the southern mountains on the back of a mule, you know, at risk of being attacked, you know, mm-hmm. by ne'er-do-wells, you know, up in the mountains. Sure. And, you know, able to fend for herself. So the way that I always saw the role, she's, if you put it in one terms, she's a feminist ahead of the wave of feminism, because feminism, as we've heard it, even in the 1920s and 30s, was an urban kind of thing. Women would get together and march, you know, temperance marches and things like that. But you're all together in a group, and you tend to be in a city. And she's by herself out on the road, and anything could happen to you.
Yeah, I guess so. The recording machine was the key here. She didn't write down the words or the notes.
Oh, she does. She does. I mean, you know, it's a complete action. I mean, it's not just we record it. You know, she's not just like a walking recording machine. I mean, she is a musicologist, an ethnomusicologist in the sense that she's very much about music that originates from, you know, it's about immigrant music, basically. Music originating outside the United States, coming here, and then changing and evolving. But yes, she is cataloging all the songs. She's writing down the lyrics. She's writing the music. So she's very, very smart. The other thing is, too, Frank was just hitting this, you know, when I read the script, one thing that jumped out at me about Susanna is that, yes, she's an academic. Yes, she does these things. Yeah, and I think it's, I'm not judging those other productions by any means, but it's shortchanging Susanna just to make her bookish and librarianish. Mm-hmm. Certainly, she has some of those qualities. She's very intellectual, very smart, but also she did do these intrepid journeys into the Appalachians. She is in the Texas prison farm system alone. You know, a woman alone. There's a fierceness that jumped out at me, and Vanessa brings that. You know, in bucket loads. You know, she is a fierce actor anyway, mm-hmm. And so to bring that quality to Susanna, I think it may be different, as Frank is saying, from others, but it pairs her well against the fierceness of Pearl. I mean, these are two strong women, strong in spirit, strong in in physical strength. I think the ability to just be able to endure the things that they've had to endure. You know, this is 1933 America, where women's voices and actions and accomplishments are completely undervalued, and that is examined in this play too. And so the connection that they have with that is strong, and the need to prove themselves is strong, especially Susanna. And so, like I said, I couldn't have asked for a better cast to bring that. And they are. I mean, like you were saying, you know, maybe this is a different role for her. I think it is so for Nedra. I think as actors, sometimes we ourselves are never surprised by, I knew Vanessa was fierce and could do this. I knew Nedra was fierce and could do this. But a lot of times I think audiences are, because what they've seen us in, or the preconceptions of, Walter's this kind of a, an actor. He does this, and then this person does that. And so when we do have an opportunity to kind of break out of that box, boy, we leap on that.
I bet so.
Yeah, I never doubted for a moment with either of these women that this was out of their wheelhouse. Never. And they just keep proving me right day in and day out.
And what I was excited about in terms of having Walter direct Black Pearl Sings for Spinning Tree Theater was my experience across the country. I've become a huge fan of having actors as directors, because what does that mean? It usually means, I think, that they're dedicated to let's tell the story. Let's tell the story cleanly and clearly, and so that you work from the inside out. When I have seen productions of any kind of play around the country, whether I wrote it or not, isn't the point. What often happens if somebody is not operating from that paradigm, that then it becomes about outside, from the outside in rather than the inside out. So if you could, you know, observe rehearsals and you see Walter Coppedge working with Nedra Dixon and Vanessa Severo, what you sense, it's three actors together. One of those actors is functioning as a director, which is, a kind of channeler and things. But it's three actors working together. They're talking the same language in terms of text and subtext and how to capture things. And it's really exciting. And
well, that was my approach. My directing experience is limited, so I thought, approach them as actors. And, the other thing is, too, is I was able to draw from the experience of having worked with some really great directors. And a few of them, I actually was able to, before we started this process, say, hey, got any advice for a newbie? And they threw out some suggestions, and they were great, and I have utilized those. But, yeah, I think this is a very character-driven play. Exactly. I think if we start from the outside in, it's not going to work. It's got to start from the inside and grow out. And, it's an organic process. And so, yeah, of course I spoke to them as actors because that's who I am. And I've been that's who I really am. I've got this other hat on, but it's brand new. It's still got the label on it,
As opposed to pick up the cup, stare out into space for a three count, then step forward with your left foot first.
Yeah. Sometimes the stage direction says that.
It
literally.
Can be. It
not
can
my
be.
Stage direction.
And the big thing for me was, as a director, I thought was to stay out of their way. Encourage support, but don't get in the way.
Yeah. An actor's director. Black Pearl Sings opens this Friday, March 6th, at the Just Off Broadway Theater. It's a Spinning Tree Theater production. We want to thank Michael and Andy for helping put on Frank's play as well. I'm sure Frank thanks them.
Oh, sure. I thank them as well. Yes.
And go to their website for specific times each night. But as Frank said, like Wednesday and Thursday would be 7:30, probably Friday and Saturday 8, Sunday afternoon 2. It's going to be something like that. But go to their website, SpittingTreeTheater.com, or call their box office number, 816-569-5277. The Just Off Broadway Theater is at 3051 Pin Valley Drive. That's the very south end of Pin Valley Park by 31st Street. If you want a MapQuest, you need the zip code. It's 64108. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Frank Higgins, playwright. Don't have time for all your credits again, Frank.
Thank goodness for that.
And Walter Coppedge, actor extraordinaire, now director extraordinaire.
Oh, come see Walter Coppedge's debut. He's wonderful.
I'm sure he is. I have no doubt in my mind. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3. The blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. Check out our webpage, kkfi.org. Click on our podcast. I have many of my shows are on podcast. The show literally never has to end online, so check that out. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you